The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Buck Ballew here with some great news. Nobody knows the real estate market up 400 and around Lake Lanier than my friend Mickey Himes and the GetMickey.com team at Keller Williams. You see, experience matters. If you've got an interest in Lake Lanier property or up 400 properties, go to GetMickey.com, click, and talk with an expert right now. Or call 678-341-7474. Mickey Himes is the man in the Lake Lanier real estate market. This is Buck Ballew. You can trust this dog and the entire GetMickey.com team.
An ambassador for the dogs and broadcasting live from Truist Park every day.
All day, every day.
It's time for Buck's Beat with Buck Ballew.
Welcome back to Buck's Beat, episode 13. We'll talk NFL draft and Georgia football with Georgia legend, college football Hall of Famer, and Super Bowl champion, and friend Kevin Butler. NFL draft this week, G-Day last week. So Butler experience with both. I thought it'd be a great time to get Kevin on the podcast and add another Hall of Famer to the Bucks Beat hit list. KB grew up in Stone Mountain and attended Redan High School before he starred at the University of Georgia. KB ended up being drafted by the Chicago Bears in the fourth round. And let's bring on my friend right now. Kevin Butler joins us on Bucks Beat.
Bucks Beat.
And joining us now, College Football Hall of Famer, Bulldog legend, the man, Kevin Butler. KB, great to have you on, buddy. And let's talk about the NFL draft. That's what everybody's talking about right now. Take us back. You're a fourth round pick, I believe player 105, if I remember correctly. Chicago Bears give you the call. It's the moment you've been waiting for a lifetime. Take us back to draft night.
Wow. Well, thanks. It's always good to be with you, Buck. And that's taken me back a long time ago. But, you know, the first draft night kind of went, unexcited because nothing happened. I think we did maybe, at least the first two rounds that night, maybe the first three. I was sitting there with my fiance at the time, Kathy, and we didn't get a phone call. So the next day, you go into day two, and you're a little bit more, got a little bit of anxiety working, and you're not sure what had happened. A few kickers started to be taken. I think John Lee was taken by St. Louis. And
UCLA, and, right?
Yeah, then somebody else got drafted, and then, the night before, ESPN had really kind of just started back then. This was in 1985, and we saw a film on ESPN about this Chicago Bear guy that was just running over people, and it was really the first time that I had seen film on Mike Ditka. And come day two of the draft, I get a call, and it was Mike Ditka, and they told me that they were going to pick me, and they were excited about it. And, I was kind of bewildered because back then, we didn't have a combine. You'd get brought in by teams in pre-draft, and Buffalo, Miami, those were the two that I really felt I was going to be drafted by. And they took kickers, respectively, in other rounds. So the Bears took me. I was so excited. You jump right into Brian's song, and that's really the only thing I knew about the Bears growing up, and I tried to dive into it, and 2 days later they flew you up there, and my journey started, and it's a very exciting time for all these young men that are going to go through the draft this week. But I tell you, you never know what's going to happen, and my advice would be to embrace whatever happens, embrace it with 100% of enthusiasm, and go out there and give it your all. You never know how long you play for.
Now, Ditka, we're talking about an old school guy, right? Rugged, rough, and tough.
Yeah.
How do you go about earning his respect as a kicker?
Well, you know, I kind of took a lot of it from our coaching staff, Buck, at Georgia. You know, you got Coach Casey, who was in charge of us all in the off season, and, you know, I felt like I'd certainly earned his respect by my work ethic. And I think that's the same way I approached the next Pennsylvania guy that I went up against, you know. And, you know, Coach Casey, who really helped develop me mentally and physically at Georgia, I just think that prepared me for Coach Dicka. I mean, Coach Dicka was a hard ass. I mean, he would challenge you, and if you did not learn to challenge him back, he really looked at it as a negative on you, that you weren't willing to stand up for yourself. So throughout my career, the more Dicka yelled at me, he knew he could get me more focused, and you know, whether it would be with yelling back or just my look that I would give him every now and then, I really think he knew how to punch my button to get me more focused, and I really did learn a lot of that from the expectations that were set at Georgia.
Now, the first trip up for me, I go up, and it's like midseason, your rookie year, and it's already, the wind's blowing in Chicago, and it is cold, brother. And so I take a look at this flagpole with a flag on it, and the flag is just starched. And I look at you and said, now, Kevin, you're going to try to make a career in Chicago kicking the football. I thought you were absolutely you were in a really tough spot. You're there for a decade. Kevin, how did that happen?
Well, you know,
skill, talent.
I have a lot of great players around me. You know, and I think my work ethic, you know, I never was, you know, I was never perfect. And when I missed, you know, my teammates supported me because they knew I was prepared. And I think as players, that's all you can be when it comes game time. If you do your work and you're prepared to go out there and execute in the game, it's just much easier to accept the outcome. You know, the worst thing you want to be is have a bad outcome and sit there and question yourself and, you know, could I have done more to be ready? And I think I always acted like that and carried myself like that. Coach Dicka was tolerant. You know, let's be honest. You know, you know the numbers I put up, you know, are not the numbers that kickers are putting up nowadays, but the ones I did make that at the end and when it counted, that's what kept me around. You know, I didn't have misses that lost us games. I didn't have, you know, streaks like that. And I think that's certainly you have to do that as a kicker. You have to be much more successful than you do the defeats that you will suffer. But, again, don't let it be because you weren't prepared.
Tell these kids now what Walter Payton was like.
Well, you know, it jumps. That's a good segue. I mean, he was the most prepared. Walter would do, he would work and approach every day as a chance to get better. And, you know, you hear it a lot, but when you see it and you understand what commitment he had on a daily basis to being the best, the greatest. And his really drive when I was there was about championships. He was unfortunate enough not to have that world championship when I got there. He was a vocal leader on the team. He was a leader by example. And, you know, when you could get on the same team, and, you know, it was from the first time, my first meeting, I came out of that first meeting after listening to him speak to me like a teammate, I called back home and said, you know, whatever it takes, I'm going to make this team. And that was really the big thrill of being a teammate of the greatest running back that certainly I ever played with, and I think the NFL's ever seen.
Who's the best kicker right now, NFL?
Well, you know what? I think you know, Justin Tucker is certainly up there. I think Robbie Gould is certainly up there. And, you know, I even like the Georgia Tech boy, Buckner. I think that, you know, very powerful, big leg. And I just like the determination in those three guys. There's, you know, the numbers these kickers put up are just phenomenal now. You know, you're looking in the high 80s, low 90%. So when they do miss, everybody, all of a sudden start thinking about getting another kicker. Well, those three guys will be around for a long time, and it's fun to watch them.
Kevin, take us back. Talk to these Bulldog fans that are listening right now. As you leave high school, going into college, Rex Robinson, all-SEC kicker, was exiting as you stepped in there in 1981. What were your dreams? What were your expectations at that point in time?
Well, my dreams and my expectations were to maintain what Rex had built and then try to up the level, push it up, make it, make some new levels. I think that's how you get better. So, my main thing when I first got up there, I graduated early from high school, and I went into that spring practice. I enrolled in school. JoJo took a loan out and paid for my way to get up there early, and that was very important for me to gain confidence in you guys, Buck, to see my work ethic, to see that I had the ability to do it if I could perform at the level that Rex did. And we had some great competition there with, the kickers that were there. So when I got in there, I heard you talking the other day on your show about, stats. And did you ever, always compare yourself to what other guys did on a weekly basis? And most of the players were saying, no, I never did. But, I was laughing because I was like, man, that is all I did. I would, compare myself to every other kicker in the nation to be the best, because it's a very factual thing. If you're the best kicker, you're 90%, you're making field goals, you're scoring points. So that's really what I tried to do, is set a new level that Rex had set, and even set it with a national championship as an exclamation point. So the shoes were big, and I was very respectful. The one thing that really scared me a little bit was putting on number five. They gave me a chance. I wanted a single-digit number, and the only two that were there was number one and number five. And I think a number, Chuck Jones had number one. It might have been seven or five. I don't know. But I took five, and that was the first game jitters. I walked out there in my first game against Tennessee, and I felt like I kicked the ball almost out of the sideline. So Coach Dooley looked at me and told me, just try to breathe next time. And I took that advice and made the next three.
As one of the captains, when you showed up, Kevin, what really impressed me and sold me on you was your confidence, this inner confidence. We could look at you and tell that you knew you were about to go make that field goal. In fact, I remember the first time I saw you, it was during the summer, I believe, before your freshman year, and we're a little concerned about who the kicker would be the following year. And so I had a friend, our friend Perry McIntyre, took me over to see you play soccer here in Metro Atlanta, and you had a bicycle kick early on, and that you made a goal off the bicycle kick. And I remember telling Perry, that's all I needed to see right there. I think we're in really good shape. But was it true, or is it just legend? Because I remember you, one of the first days at practice, we had some little chip shot field goals. And if I remember correctly, you were out there kicking some of those things left-footed.
Oh, absolutely. I could kick 50-plus yards with both legs, no doubt. That came from my soccer background. I really felt like I probably concentrate more kicking left, because kicking right, it was kind of a reaction. When you're kicking left footed, you're focusing a little bit more. But yeah, I did, and I took it all the way to the pros. I kicked off left foot at one time in a game that we were handily winning, and my kickoff team was asking me to do it, because whenever we played a team that had a left footed kicker, well, when I was the scout team field goal, I'd turn around and kick left footed, and the guys just, much like yourself, they just thought that was cool, and it was fun. If you do,
and you were making them.
Yeah, you don't want to kick them if you're not going to make them. I mean, that makes much sense right there, does it? So, You know, it's much like I just saw a picture on a film on some social media of a pitcher that goes out there and is humming the ball right-handed, turns around, starts humming the ball left-handed. And I think when you do things so much, maybe it's because you get bored. You just start trying to entertain yourself out there. But I always enjoyed kicking left-footed and scored a lot of goals in soccer left-footed. So it wasn't so much of a hard thing to kick with both legs.
So what do you consider at Georgia your best kick? Was it the Clemson bomb? I mean, that thing would have been good from 70.
Well, the Clemson bomb was certainly the biggest at Georgia. I mean, you know, my extra point, just to give you an idea, you know, as a kicker, that 60-yarder for me was not as nervous as going out to kick the extra point to beat Texas in the Cotton Bowl. You know, so many things can go wrong on an extra point, and it's right there in front of you. I think those are the type of situations that make you, if you do get nervous, puts a little bit of nerve in you. You know, the 60-yarder, the greatest thing about the 60-yarder to me was, you know, finishing it for my team that just played their ass off in the second half against a great Clemson team. They fought back, and it was right there to win. And, you know, and yeah, was I confident? Absolutely, I was confident. I knew I could kick it right-footed, and I could kick it that far left-footed, but I wasn't going to choose left-footed. I was going to kick it right-footed. And, you know, when I hit it, you know, 1 second after I hit it, I knew it was going to be good because, you know, you kick balls for a living, and you know what they look like, much like a golf ball. You know if it's going to start turning left or turning right, and you know when you hit that good drive, and that was one of those walk-off drives.
You know, one of the explanations I have when people say, you know, Buck, what about the success in the early 80s that the Bulldogs had? What were some of the, you know, big factors that enabled you guys to do that, other than Herschel, obviously? But I always go to the coaching and the great coaches that Coach Dooley had on that staff. And obviously, Irk is the guy that jumps out first. But I look up and down the team with Mike Cavan, Wayne McDuffie, guys like Charlie Whittemore, just on offense alone. But a lot of people overlook Bill Hartman, a legend when it comes to Georgia football. He coached you. What was the secret sauce with Bill Hartman?
It's very simple. It was structure. You know, he gave us structure in practice. We came out to practice, and we were responsible to him as a coach to do the drills and the setup and chart yourself and understand what you were doing that, you know, it was going to affect the team if we did not perform well. And I think, you know, that's something that I was able to do for Georgia when I went back to school and got to be with Rodrigo and those guys and Cam, is just give them more structure. And I think kickers respond to it because they're all very disciplined. But when you try to do it on your own on a daily basis and you're in college, well, there's a lot of things going on in a young man's mind that are not going to make him focus 100% at practice on a daily basis if the coaches are expecting him to do it himself. So what Coach Hartman did for me was gave me structure, gave me tools to measure myself, and gave me kicking lessons. I mean, he knew what he was doing. He knew how kickers needed to react to be consistent, things to look at. He took me to another level kicking.
It is now time for the Big Three.
Let's roll out the Big Three.
All right, number one, Kevin.
Yep.
How about Coach Butler here? The success that Rodrigo Blankenship has had, what'd you do to help him?
Wow. Well, you know what I did? I just I think I gave him confidence, and I think I gave him the mental ability to be okay with missing a kick and to make sure you know why you missed it and then leave it and get on to the next kick. I think when I started working with Rodrigo, he was so focused and so determined to be perfect that it was kind of choking him out. You know, you got to be realistic. and you get out there and you react. And boy, he is blossomed into a great kicker. And you know, he's got structure, and he doesn't let kicks mess with him like they did, you know, when we first got together. I think, you know, if you can forget it as a good kicker, you got to have a short memory.
All right, number two, what's tougher, playing or watching? Your son Drew comes along and goes down a very similar path. How tough was it watching? Was it nerve-wracking?
Yeah, watching is I've never felt like I did as a, when I played like I did when I was watching my son. You have no control. I'm a control freak. You can ask my wife. I want to be in control. But when your son's out there playing, you have no control. It's as you know, you see it now, Buck. You're living it. It ain't easy.
Let me tell you about it, brother. All right, number three, Kevin, this number three has become sort of a outside-the-box kind of question. They've got a hat here with a bunch of crumpled-up paper. Let me pull one out.
Pull one out.
See what we got here. Oh, this should be good. All right. Now we're talking about your spouse here. Tell us about the first date. All right, where'd you go? What did you do?
Our first date, Kathy, was a Theta up at Georgia, and I asked her out after a football game, and we went to the Catholic Center and went to church on Sunday afternoon in Athens, Georgia. And then we went to the Sons of Italy, and where I probably ordered a sandwich, Italian sandwich, and she probably ordered a salad. She was a cheerleader then.
Hey, one more thing. I was at G-Day. And really impressed, too, with our kicker now that won that game, won the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl against Cincinnati. The great job he did. But they had Camarda was, I believe, 1-for-4 kicking field goals. He's the high-thought-of punter. And then you had the freshman that they signed from Texas. I don't recall him kicking any field goals. What was going on, you think?
You know what? I have no idea. Since I was fired as a coach after I got my degree, I have not really had much with them. I know Coach Cochran up there. I heard they signed a punter from the Australian Rule Group. But Jake, I'm sure he's kicking a little bit of field goals, just trying to make his resume look a little better.
There you go.
But that young man's a punter. He's going to be a punter at the next level. Whoever gets him is going to get a great athlete. And he can kick field goals, which is very important in the pros. When you get to the pro level, if you're a punter, you need to be a good holder, which Jake is, and then you need to be able to kick field goals if something happens to that field goal kicker that you have on your team. So, I'm not sure about the kid from Texas, how he's doing. My belief was, he really crowds the ball when he kicks, and somebody needs to work with him to get him a little bit back off that ball so he can use his size and his strength a little bit more. But, I'm sure Coach Cochran and that group up there is doing everything they can to put the kids on the field that they want on the field.
KB, thanks for the time, brother.
Always, Buck.
Bucks Beat.
Kevin Butler has just been a great friend of mine through the years. We played a lot of fun golf together and share the love of the game of football. Great having KB on. Thanks for listening to Bucks Beat, episode 13. Remember to like and subscribe. You can find Bucks Beat wherever you find your podcast, or you can find it at thepodcastpark.com, brought to you by Associated Credit Union.
Subscribe to Bucks Beat and get the latest updates every week from the most connected guys in Georgia sports. Follow Buck at BuckBaloo8 on Twitter and check out all the fan podcasts at thepodcastpark.com.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Ballew here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car-buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit JimEllis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.